Welcome to the Highbury Squad. You can follow us on Twitter at Highbury Squad. In fact, it's the same on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and eventually iTunes. Join me, Sophie, aka at Soccer Diva, Amanda, aka at GoonaGirl1969, and our very special guest, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell. It's just like being down the pub with your mates.
Welcome, boys and girls, to another Highbury Squad episode. It has been a rough few weeks to be a Gooner, but here we are in a room, hopefully ready to cuddle and have a good conversation about what we can fix with the old Arsenal. Or can they be fixed? Super Kevin Campbell can't join us this evening, but we do have his dulcet tones available and we will be playing some questions throughout the show. But joining me this evening is my podcast sister, PG. Amanda, welcome.
Hello, darling. How are you?
It's a loaded question today. It really is. I mean, life's good. Football's not. And I think, you know, we'll survive somehow. I think we'll get through it.
But it's not loaded. I'm generally asking how you are after the fact that you nearly spoilt Game of Thrones for me because you kept going on about you need an oxygen tank to watch it. So just because you're in La La Land and can watch it at 9 o'clock at night, next week I'm not talking to you from Sunday night until I've watched it, okay?
This is all fair. All fair, and my girl Cersei is going to mix things up next week anyway, so I have that on good authority from someone who I know.
Oh, my God, shut up. Seriously.
All right, fine.
Spoilers.
Sure, fine, I will. I will shut up because we are joined by a guest who I love to kind of bring in towards the end of the season. I've been talking football with this wonderful man for many, many years. He has definitely been the voice of reason. He is an absolute trailblazer when it comes to Arsenal podcasters. To me, I've always called him the Velvet Voice. He and Gunner Blog, I love their content. We love what they do. We're huge fans of the show. Andrew Mangan, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the Highbury Squad.
Thank you very much. What a wonderful introduction. I couldn't ask for nicer.
Here's what we're going to do. We're not even going to like sugarcoat this or talk about the weather or how you are or what you think about Game of Thrones. We can get all to that later. I'm going to start off with a question for you. I have a couple questions. Kev can't be on the pod today. Right. So he has this for you. So we're going to get stuck right in. You ready?
Sure I am. Go for it.
Here we go.
There's a question for the Highbury Squad and Ask Blog. How many players do you think Arsenal need to upgrade under Unai Emery? That's one. And number two, because it's a two-part question, which players would you get rid of? So that's a two-part question.
Here's another one for you too, but why don't we just start right there, Andrew?
Yeah, why don't you just throw me right in at the deep end? I mean, can we not do a bit of weather first? God almighty.
Is it sunny in Ireland? Is it sunny? Where are you in the world right now? Sure, fine, yeah, why not?
In Dublin, it's not sunny at all. Okay, I think I'd rather talk about this than Dublin weather. Right, okay, how many players do we need to upgrade? That's a really good question. We need to upgrade two of our central defenders. We need to upgrade one or two of our central midfielders. We need to upgrade two of our wide forwards, I think. I mean, upgrade or, I mean, does he mean actually upgrade or how many players do we need to sign? Is that?
I think he means, I don't know if those are, upgrade would be those guys actually starting to play properly. Mm. So yeah, I think he means upgrade in that if we're going to get rid of, you know, Mustafi, you know, yeah. So it's upgrading each of those in any position that you think. I mean, there's a lot of upgrading required, no?
There is. I mean, I wrote about this on the blog today, actually. So I'm just going to get the blog up here because it's a handy reference tool for me. And what I did was I actually talked about what I thought we needed to do in the summer. And I had nine things, right? So replacement for Petr Cech, because he's obviously retiring. So we need a backup for Bernd Leno. Mm-hmm. We need a replacement for Aaron Ramsey, but we also need at least one central midfielder as well, I think, or we certainly need a central midfielder to replace Ramsey. We need a replacement for Danny Welbeck, who's leaving on a free, but we also need to bring in a wide forward, somebody who can carry the ball, somebody who can dribble, maybe not a traditional winger, but somebody who offers us a goal threat from wide positions. I think we need a right back because Hector is not going to be ready for the start of the season. Carl Jenkinson, I think, will go. Stefan Lichtsteiner, I think, will go. I'm not sure Ainsley Maitland-Niles is or wants to be a right back. I think he's being asked to do a job at the moment, but I'm not sure that's where he wants to be. I do kind of think we need a left back. Monreal is 33. And we don't know what his contract situation is like at the moment. We really need at least one central defender, don't we? Because, you know, I don't think anybody needs to see, much more of Mustafi in their life. Koscielny, it sounds funny, but I'm not joking.
No, we're not either. No, you're right.
I'm thinking of everybody here. You know, Koscielny, who I love, is going to be 34, and I still think he's got a role to play in the squad, but I don't believe it's somebody as a player who's going to start week in, week out. You know, I think he's somebody who could add some depth and experience in the squad. So you're looking at bringing in or adding 5 or 6 players. I don't see us maybe making that many signings because we might look for solutions that are internal. You know, the Emi Martinez, for example, could be our number 2 goalkeeper next season. Reece Nelson, after his loan spell at Hoffenheim, could be one of our wide forwards. Joe Willock, for example, if you let someone like Elneny go, Joe Willock could probably take his place in the squad without it really affecting the quality. But in terms of the starting 11, you know, I think we need at least 3, maybe 4 players to properly upgrade the starting 11.
Boy, that is quite the laundry list. And I think it shows, you know, when we talk about it and we kind of really go into each position and we look at what the team is, what the quality is, what we have available to us from a youth point of view. Before we play Kev's next question, Andrew, do you think, I love all your suggestions, by the way. I think that's great. Do you think the Willocks of the world, the Reece Nelsons, who's done really well in Germany, Smith Rowe, who I don't think is available to us, is he? Because his loan extends to next season.
Not sure if that's true. I mean, it might be, but I don't know. There was some talk of it, but I don't think it's official yet.
Okay. Well, I would love, even in these latter stages of the Premier League, is it naive to just kind of throw these guys in, the ones that are available, to just see how they can compete? Mm. And are those guys really ready to step up if we want to be that team that does truly challenge for that top 4 space? Because it seems like we're a top 4 team versus even being close to challenge for the Premier League.
Sorry, can I just say something before Andrew says something? I wouldn't throw them in, not the next 2 games, the league games. It's going to be toxic. That's not fair on them because we could be in a position where for some unknown reason on the last game of the season, we could still end up trying to get 4th. I think it's... Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying, Andrew? I don't think it's fair. Maybe put them in against Valencia, but I think it's more toxic against those 2 games. And unless we play Burnley away and we're definitely going to be 5th, then throw them in. Why not? But don't think it's fair. They're not the ones that have contributed to this. You know, I think, I just think I wouldn't do that.
No, I agree. You know, as long as we have something to play for, I think you do have to default to the players who, you know, most of us would like to throw off a diving board into a, you know, a waterless pool at this moment in time. But, you know, you do have to. And I think you're right. As long as there is something to play for, we've got to.
Yeah.
We've got to just err on the side of experience and caution and hope that they can do it. You know, the fact is Smith Rowe's in Germany. Nelson's in Germany anyway. Joe Willock, I'm not sure he's the kind of guy who's going to make a big difference. If there was nothing whatsoever to play for, I think you could probably give it a go. But, you know, Chelsea could drop points and it's important that we win on Sunday against Brighton. It could come down to the final game of the season. And, you know, I think that's a fair point. You know, it shouldn't be on these young guys. And if, It's a bit too much pressure as well, you know, to go to Burnley, where Manchester City really struggled at the weekend, and say to young players, go get us a result against this team who the champions only won by a goal that had barely crossed the line, you know? So
yeah,
I think that's a bit of pressure, too much pressure.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And I think the last thing we want to do is set up these young players to fail, yeah, especially exactly. when we're trying to reignite.
It'll knock their confidence, and it won't do them any good if the fans are going ballistic at Burnley away because we've missed out. It's not fair. But as I said, if we're only fifth, you might as well play them, to be honest. Let them have a run out.
Right. Here we go with Super Kev's next question, which will lead us to what I believe is the nucleus of the club's problems.
Another question for at Highbury Squad and Arsblog. Who's going to be on? I'm sorry, I can't be on tonight. This is a question. Do you think Stan Kroenke and the Arsenal board will back Unai Emery for a summer of upgrading? I've asked one question already, and I just want to know what your thoughts are on if he's going to get backed.
I think this is half of our problem. And I think we've all had this discussion and this debate, you guys. And when I see John Henry, another American owner, I was just talking about this actually on the Dan Patrick show the other day, where, you know, two players made them competitive again. They had been building over a few seasons, Liverpool. They have upgraded. They've bought really good players, Mane, Salah. And now with Virgil van Dijk and Alisson, they've made themselves Premier League competitors. What are your thoughts, Andrew, on our owner, what the true investment is, the 45 million? How can we make this work? And what do you think about what Kev said?
Do I think that they're going to back Unai Emery for a summer of upgrading? I mean, I think they will give him some money to spend. I think there will be money to spend. Will there be the kind of investment that shows a genuine ambition to get this club back to where we want it to be? No, I don't. I mean, you're talking about, you know, I saw stories today where our budget could be 70 million pounds. I mean, what does 70 million pounds get you?
Nothing.
I mean, in fairness, we spent 70 million pounds last summer and it got us Torreira, Guendouzi, Lichtsteiner, who I know is a free transfer, Socrates and Leno. And I think in general, you could say that's a reasonable spend of 70 million pounds. The problem, or certainly an issue that I see, is that the guy who we had, who identified those signings and did a lot of the groundwork to make those signings happen, left the club in February. Mm-hmm. We don't have a technical director. So the question becomes, who is making the decisions about which players we're going to sign? Who's doing the scouting? Who is identifying the areas in the squad where we need players? And if, as I suspect, it's Unai Emery and Raul Sanyehi, I have to say that the January signing of Denis Suarez does not instill me with a great deal of faith that their decision making when it comes to player recruitment is top notch, because I think we're operating at a level where we need to be as a club. We need to be really, really smart. And our competitive advantage would be to have a technical director or a head of recruitment who has got a track record of identifying young talent who can come into this club and can come in for whatever it was that we paid for Guendouzi, 7 or 8 million pounds. And Torreira, not inexpensive or not hugely expensive, but not a cheap signing. He was about 26 million pounds. You know, we have to operate within those kind of price brackets. I think we're looking at making signings around 15, 20, 30 million pounds maximum. I don't see us spending 50 million, 60 million, 70 million pounds on a player. So we have to be really smart about who we bring in. And I'm not sure we've got the people to do that. That's my big, big worry. The other worry, of course, is the fact that Kroenke, I don't believe for a second, will invest money in the club that we don't already have. You know, so we're going to use this self-sustaining model. We spend what we earn, and I know we've got more money coming from the Adidas deal and everything else. But the issue I take with this is that we have an owner who says and has said publicly that he wants Arsenal to win the Premier League. He wants Arsenal to win the Champions League. He wants Arsenal to win the biggest trophies in football. He wants Arsenal to be one of the biggest clubs in the world. But you can't do that without proper investment. You just can't these days. It's the reality of it. Unless you're super smart and super efficient in doing your transfer business. And I'm not sure that a club that basically sacks its technical director in February makes a balls of bringing in the guy that they had identified to replace him, who was Monchi, who said, fuck this, I'm going back to Sevilla. I don't know that that's super smart or being run very well. So that's where I have the two worries.
So, Andrew, let's just go back to last season and the start of this season. You know, I was asked on a radio station back in August what my hopes were and what did I expect. And I said, look, I said, none of us know what he's going to do at Arsenal. We know what we've been left with. Whether you were Wenger in or Wenger out or wherever it was, everyone could see that squad was depleted. The defence was shocking. There's no difference, really. Actually, I think we've got worse. And I said to them, I'd like top four and the FA Cup because I want to go back home and win it, or a cup. And he laughed at me. The guy on the radio laughed, said, really? You expect that? I said, don't expect it, but I think we can do it. I said, we hadn't seen Torreira then. You know, there was names coming in like Leno and Socrates, as you said. You know, it wasn't a bad 70 million spent. You look at Torreira, I mean, oh, amazing. But as the season went on, you know, our problem was our expectations got higher, because when Wenger left, everyone said, oh, we're going to have a transitional period. It's going to be, it could be a couple of years. Look at United, you know, blah, blah, blah. We all just hoped around fifth or sixth and to keep within the pack. But the problem was he went on that 21-22 unbeaten run. And our hopes got high. We then beat Tottenham. We've then done really well in certain areas of the league, plus the Europa League. And I think people have just jumped ahead. Now, what's happened is in the last, well, I think it started before Everton. Just before Everton, we started to play very, very poorly. And at Watford, we were lucky as well. Yeah. And I just think it's just crumbled. And I can't put my finger on it, because last month when we played Napoli away, I don't care what anyone says, whether they were rubbish or not, we played great against Napoli in both games, and then it just literally crumbled. Now, we all know that Mustafi shouldn't be playing in our defence. I haven't met anyone that disagrees with that. What I don't get is, A, the Ramsey situation. Because I said it months ago, he's going to be one of the biggest losses we'll ever experience. And we are missing him now. That's what we're missing as well. Do you feel that it's now unfair on Emery? Because at the beginning, everyone was like, no, don't expect anything. And now he is being ripped to pieces because of the last three or four games. What's your view on that?
My view on that is that when you get into a position like we were in 10 days ago, where a win over Crystal Palace would have got us to third place and above Tottenham, who are the media darlings despite losing 12 games this season, even if that was more than you expected from this season, I think the way that we've blown it in the last week surely must raise questions about the manager's ability to produce results when we absolutely need them. And, you know, I'll be absolutely fair to him. I didn't expect us to be in that position or necessarily quite as close to the top four as we were. I thought if we could get top four this season, it would be considered a successful season. We still could.
Yeah.
In fairness. But I think when you, when you get into a position that looks really healthy and then you lose four of your five league games, it doesn't reflect very well on you. Now, if you lose those four of those five games and you're playing Man City and Liverpool and Manchester United or Chelsea or Tottenham or other teams in the big six, you could perhaps make a case that the quality of the opposition is the key factor. We've lost to Palace, to Everton, to Wolves and to Leicester. You know, when you looked at that run in, after we had that really great week where we drew with Tottenham, a game we should have won, and then we beat Manchester United, and you looked at the run in, I mean, have you ever seen such a kind run of fixtures in the final part of the season? You know, so I think he was maybe ahead of where we expected him to be, and we are still in the Europa League, and that's a, you know, an achievable goal this season. And I really, really hope that we go on and lift that trophy, because it would be fantastic for everybody. You know, we haven't won a European trophy since 1994, but I, you know, from the league is the bread and butter. It's always the thing on which you really base the quality of your season, right?
Yes, definitely.
You know, you look at it, they always say table doesn't lie after 38 games and everything else. But so I feel a bit disheartened at having got to where we got to and having just blown it in a big way. I think, you know, he had a really bad week. I think it maybe stems back to the team selection against Crystal Palace, which was too conservative. Then he decided he had to be a bit more risky against Wolves, and that didn't pay off. And then the way we approached the game against Leicester was terrible. I thought, you know, there was no real intent to go and play football. And this is Arsenal away at Leicester. You know, I think regardless of what you think about some of the players, they're capable of better. And I just thought the approach going into that Leicester game was really small time and didn't reflect well on him. And the result obviously was really poor again. So, you know, I'm sort of conflicted. I can understand all the problems and the challenges that he's had this season, but I also feel like at a key point in the campaign, he's managed it badly. And I think, you know, it's quite damaging. You know, if something happens early in the season, maybe you've got time to put it right. But at the end of the season, you don't have the ability to correct the mistakes. And I think these have been mistakes. And you know, certainly my faith has been a little shaken in Unai Emery over the last week or 10 days.
Yeah, that's really interesting you say that. So's mine. And I have been his biggest defender the whole way through. Like, give him a chance, give him time. This is not his team. You know, he's got to get used to the Premier League and everything. Where I sit at the Emirates, I'm virtually opposite him, if you know what I mean. I watch him a lot of the game. His passion and his love, honestly, what you see on TV is only a minuscule part of it. He's up the whole game virtually, and he's directing, he's doing what he's got to do. Yeah, but I agree with you. I've lost a little bit of faith in the last few matches because I'm like, why have you chosen this formation? Just something I wanted to go back to. I'm really concerned about Aubameyang. Look, we all go through bad patches in the season. All players do it, okay? I feel like he's lost his confidence. And for me, you mentioned it, we nearly beat Tottenham. To not only when we deserve to beat them, to miss a penalty in the last seconds has got to knock your confidence, hasn't it? It's got to. And I've, look, like we all, I've been at the Emirates and we've watched all the games on TV. We've never been away or whatever. He's just not with it at the moment. And he's trying. I'm not saying he's not trying, but Lacazette, for me, has been the better of the two through the season. He has tried every single game. I just wonder with Aubameyang, is it just a period of lack of confidence? Is that what's going on, or does he not actually suit what Emery's trying to do?
Well, I think maybe there's a lack of confidence. He could be going through a little bit of a poor spell. I mean, let's remember he did score a penalty the week after, didn't he?
Yeah.
To beat Manchester United? And he took the same terrible penalty that he took against Tottenham. and he scored that. So I think that might have, you know, resolved his confidence. To me, I think it's there's a problem with Arsenal, and we can talk about our defense till the cows come home, right? And we can talk about individual players who need to be upgraded, and we all know who they are. You know, I think the probably the most disappointing thing for me this season is the fact that defensively, I don't think we've improved one bit. I think perhaps we're even a bit worse defensively.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, and that's disappointing, and quality of the individuals comes into it. But the amount of chances that we allow the opposition, it's been an ongoing problem all season. Even during that 22 game unbeaten run, there were quite a number of games where we rode our luck and the opposition didn't take chances. And when the opposition started taking their chances, our results disimproved. However, I think there's another problem, and I think it's a lack of cohesion in attack, a lack of creativity. We are not making chances for our two strikers. And I think Lacazette looks busier and more involved in games where we don't create a lot of chances because that's just his game. He is more naturally involved in the build-up, and he'll come deep. Aubameyang is a finisher. You know, he gets into positions, you give him the ball, and he finishes. Now, he misses a fair few along the way, but he's our leading scorer. He's 25 goals this season.
Bizarre, isn't it? It is bizarre, Andrew, because you feel he hasn't played well. But when you say it like that, it's 25 goals.
Yeah. It's 25 goals, but ask yourself, in the last few games, how many chances can you remember Aubameyang getting? And to me, I can't.
Not enough. And this is why, Andrew, this is why I think sometimes the argument with Ozil is always an interesting one. And I think it also comes back to something I've been really craving to ask you, and that's about identity. You know, we never really replaced Santi. My goodness, but for an injury, he could have been our Bernardo or David Silva. For me, Santi was the engine. He was the creative master, the genius that also allowed Ozil and Sanchez to be as good as they were. And dare I say this, but I feel like since Santi and Sanchez haven't been in the side, we've lost our identity. If someone was to ask me, okay, you support Arsenal Football Club, who are you? What's your identity? What's your mantra as a team? And I think Emery's been tinkering maybe on the Claudio Ranieri scale of tinkering, because perhaps he doesn't even know what the identity is yet, because he doesn't have his own players that he can plug into the system that he wants. I think part of Pochettino's success at Tottenham is no matter who comes in or who goes out, they have an identity. Liverpool, no matter who goes in, who goes out. Same with City. Chelsea United and Arsenal this season have really lost their identity as football clubs. And I just wondered what you thought about that in terms of, you mentioned creativity, and one of the things that everyone used to love about Arsenal, even if you were a neutral, was that part of our artisan way of playing football, Andrew. Would you agree, disagree? What are your thoughts on those, not never replacing those players? Ozil's not the answer. So much is put on him. Our creativity was our muse for everything, and we've kind of lost that.
I mean, that was certainly Wenger's way, and you know, you lose Santi Cazorla, who's a player of incredible talent, who I think, you know, even now would get into this team if he was fully fit and hadn't had that terrible injury. And in Sanchez, you know, I think we forget that despite the cloud he left under, what an amazing talent he was for three seasons for us. You know, our leading goal scorer, he made plenty of assists along the way as well. A huge amount of individual quality, perhaps a little bit too much individual focus at times, but I don't think it's any coincidence that our away record since Sanchez became a slightly sidelined and peripheral to the team in his last season. And also since he's gone, our away form, the amount of games we win away from home is in the toilet, because we don't have somebody to do the difficult thing away from home because we've too many players who aren't brave enough or don't take enough responsibility and don't have the quality on top of that to make a difference. Whereas Sanchez, you can think about, you know, handfuls of games where away from home, it was his goal and his desire and his determination that got us something from the game. In terms of our identity, I don't know what it is anymore. I don't know precisely what Unai Emery wants from his players. And, you know, you can say maybe he doesn't have the players to fit into the system that he wants, but what is the system? What is the style of play? Is it a back four with two holding midfielders? Is it a back three with wing backs? Is it, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure he knows right now. And I'm not sure the players know. And I think that could well be part of our problem is that there's been a lack of consistency in terms of how we approach the game. Like, I think it's good to be able to be, I think it's good to be able to be tactically flexible and play in different ways and in different formations. But I also think you need a platform or a baseline to operate from. You know what I mean? Something that everybody knows.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they know that this is our default and we're going to play like this. Now, if we have to face certain opposition, play three at the back, we do it that way. If we play a 4-3-3, we do it that way. If we play a 4-4-2, we do it that way. You know, it's good to be able to do that, but I don't feel like we have the platform on which to base the other tactical selections.
Okay. So Andrew, to follow up on, love that and totally agree. And when I talk about identity as well, not only on the pitch, here's my biggest concern, you guys. Our most tenured talent right now, we're about to lose one of the longest serving players at Arsenal, and that is Aaron Ramsey. And I always feel like, you know, hindsight 2020, some fans have loved him, some fans haven't. He's been a great servant. And to me, he's had pivotal moments in incredible games where he can hang his hat and be not a football legend, but at least an Arsenal legend. Then you have Koscielny, who really is in the twilight of his career, not because he's not a good player, but injuries are catching up with him. And then there's Bellerin. And then you guys, after that, there's not much else. Yes, we have some young players who are coming through. But I think one of the things that I always loved about Arsenal was we did have this British core that kind of maybe didn't work out. Callum Chambers, Carl Jenkinson, Theo Walcott, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. That part of the identity, you guys, is as important to me as it is on the pitch. People who feel the club, know the club, have the soul of the club, the culture, the passion. I think that's half of our battle. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I mean, those are qualities that would obviously be very, very useful. I'm sort of loath to say that we need a load of local boys in order to have that, though. You know, because could you look at the players playing for Liverpool this season who aren't born and bred Liverpudlians and say, do they get it? Do they know what it is to be a Liverpool player? I think you probably would, right?
In North London. They don't have to be born and bred in North London, but they have to have, you know, like Mane to me feels like he's been playing for Liverpool for 10 years.
Yeah, but he came from Southampton. You know, it's maybe about the character. You know, you could certainly say that I feel quite strongly that there are deficiencies in our character. I mean, I think there are deficiencies in the balance of the squad. Some of the players, you know, technically aren't good enough. You know, they're a bit too error prone, some of them. You know, you can talk about individual quality and all that, but I do feel like there is a sort of brittleness that runs through this squad, which you can fix with better players. And I think there's an element where quality of player and character are quite intrinsically linked, you know? The ability to play consistently or play at a high level consistently is not just linked to your technical ability, but also to your character. That's just what I think. And I feel like we've got too many players who on their day are fantastic players, but every week or from week to week, they can't produce. And I think that's an issue. And that's something that the club have got to address.
My concern is they won't address that. And I agree with you on so many points. One thing that I'm missing, I think a few people don't really agree with me on this, is a proper captain. To take like Maitland-Niles in hand. And I mean, I don't believe either was a booking, if I'm honest, on Sunday. I feel he was a bit silly to go in for the second tackle to give the referee the option. That's the problem. I don't feel like there's anyone on that pitch that will take him by the scruff of the neck and tell him what to do. I mean, I know we always hark back to Adams, but we don't have anyone like that. And that's what we need. Emery needs a right-hand man on that pitch. Who's going to do it? Who causes trouble? There's no one.
Yeah, but let me ask you, let me just throw this out there. How many clubs have that? Oh, not too many.
Okay, but if you looked at, say, City, yeah? You look at Company, that you know his presence. We need a presence there. Oh, okay, look, look at Van Dijk at Liverpool. Come on, I mean.
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but, you know, people talk all the time about the need for another Tony Adams. And if we had another Tony Adams, I'd be absolutely fucking delighted because it would make such a difference to this squad. It really would. But, you know, there are players, I think, who are held up as the epitome of captaincy, you know, and you can think about Tony Adams at Arsenal. You can think about Roy Keane at Manchester United. You can think about John Terry, as much as we dislike John Terry. You know, he was that character at Chelsea. But they're rare. They're so, so rare. That's the problem. And that's why I think how long have we been saying we'd love another Vieira in midfield? And it's not for the want of trying, I guess, because if you could get another Vieira, why the hell wouldn't you get him? You know, so I feel in some ways it's aspirational to think that we can get that guy. You know, I'd love it. I would absolutely love it. Because it would make a difference. And I hope that that player comes along. I'm just not sure that there are too many of them out there. Mm-hmm. Because I think in general, they're very rare.
I'm not being biased because I like a little Souvlaki, but I think Sokratis is definitely captain material.
Do you know the problem with Sokratis? He's not as good as Adams was at that age or anything. That's the problem. I think the thing with Sokratis is, and I'm not sure you're biased anyway, Soph, but to me, he's not as good as everyone is saying in my head.
That's because he doesn't have good players around him. Okay. Some players are better with other quality players around them, and I think that's the problem with Sokratis.
Just let me finish about Sokratis. Hold on a second. I agree with you on that side, but I also feel...
I'll put my kebab down, fine.
His temperament, okay, and I don't know if this is a Greek thing, but his temperament is quite petulant as well. I mean, look, I think he's got potential, but I just go back to something else, just because this is something I want to talk to Andrew about as well, was Guendouzi, and Soph will tell you this for a fact. At the beginning of the season, when Soph and Kev were raving about him, what did I say? I said to you, I don't rate him as much as all you lot do. I think he's got potential. I think he's got passion. I think he's got a great urge to play for Arsenal. But I didn't see what everyone was seeing. And now I actually don't want him on the pitch at the moment. I feel like there's a lot of players I feel like that. I think he's got potential, but he has to be guided. You know, I think he's been thrown in a lot. I mean, if I see an Elneny and Guendouzi partnership in midfield again, Andrew, I think I'm going to have I just don't know. I can't take seeing it. It makes me actually ill with fear. So I feel there's so much potential at our club, but we do need, you know, Virgil van Dijk in our defence. What would we be like? You know, that sort of player is what we need.
Yeah. Again, you know, you think back to when We might have had Virgil van Dijk because we were interested in him when he was at Celtic. I mean, the other question that would spring to mind is, you know, what kind of a shell of a broken man would Virgil van Dijk be if he joined us from Celtic and had, you know, had to play alongside Mustafi for a couple of years, you know, but maybe playing alongside Koscielny would have been good for him as well. You know, Guendouzi, look, 19-year-old, came into the team, played without any fear.
Yeah.
The inexperience, you know, I think young players can do that. And then they, you know, they realize there's a measure of expectation. There's a measure of pressure and it doesn't go as well for them. You know, I think it's okay to be enthused by the way that he played, but I'm not saying this is going to be the case or anything like it, but do you remember when we signed Danielson?
Yeah.
And everybody said, wow, Wenger has found another Fabregas. This is amazing. And Danielson came when he arrived and was a really, really promising young player. And over the course of a number of seasons, it didn't work out. Okay. That can happen. I'm not saying Guendouzi will go that way. He could go by some distance the other way. But I still think it's way too early for me anyway to make any kind of definitive judgment on him. I think there's potential there, but at this moment in time, I don't know that you can say, you know, this guy's the future of our midfield. Certainly next season, I would hope that he's, you know, a squad player.
Yep.
And not necessarily a starter, because I think we really need a midfielder of some quality in there, because I think when you go back to talking about style and identity, I think a lot of that comes from the center of the pitch and who you've got in there. And maybe part of our lack of identity or part of our shaky identity is that we've got or have had a very shaky central midfield for a couple of years. You know, the guy that everybody says is the most important is Granit Xhaka, who has some quality as a player, but also can be quite error prone and liable to switching off and making mistakes. And, you know, maybe that's in some ways a reflection of where we are. So, you know, I'm at the point where I'll happily upgrade anybody in this team, anybody, because enough of them have had enough chances.
Yep, I agree. And I actually think Torreira, I'm worried about his stamina, but I think that he'll get used to that maybe in his second season. Now, by the way, guys, you're listening to the Highbury Squad with Andrew Mangan, who is the velvet voice of Arsenal Trailblazer, the first ever Arsenal podcast out there. We all love and adore him. And this is some really fantastic dialogue here. And before we get to, we have a ton of questions from people on Twitter. We may not get to all of them. Maybe we can answer some of them on Twitter before Amanda starts reading some out. I had to ask you this question because it's been playing on my mind for the last few months. Top four, our situation, our form, no matter whether we're playing away or home, are we getting better results against Everton, Palace, Wolves, if Bellerin, Holding, and Welbeck is available to come off the bench?
Yeah. 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 I think so, because we've got a quality right back. We've got a central defender, you know, who was having a very promising season. And in Danny Welbeck, we've got a wide forward, an alternative to our strikers, but, you know, a player who's not afraid to run at people. And also just from a very basic level, we have a deeper squad, which is better able to cope with the schedule that we've been on, because, you know, it has been very hectic. It has been really busy. I think fatigue has played a part in that. You know, I don't think we can avoid that as a factor in what's happened this month. I'm not saying it excuses it or anything like that, but, you know, I think it's a factor. And I think that's part of what Emery hasn't particularly managed well in the last month or so. But I think undoubtedly, if we had one of the best right backs in the league and Rob Holding and Danny Welbeck, I think we would be in a happier position in the league right now. No doubt in my mind. But also, let me put it to you another way. I think that when when we lost Danny Welbeck in November and when we lost Rob Holding in December, I think Unai Emery would have been right to expect more backing in the transfer market in January than he got.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
instead of being there's no money and we have to faff around for a month to bring in Denis Suarez, who ends up, you know, costing the club £3 or 4 million.
Andrew, can I just stop you there? Because this is the question I'm just about to come in with. So then you can answer this. So we had a question from at Dr. Apricot Meanie Man. He says, Ask Blog, given just how useless Denis Suarez's loan signing was, how confident are you that the summer transfer business won't just be Emery's former charges or guys Sanheli once shared a room with? Perhaps the little value we got from Suarez will persuade Arsenal to be braver. What do you think?
Well, that's I said that earlier. That is kind of my worry that, you know, if Emery and Sanyehi are the guys who are making decisions on players, you know, they spend about a month trying to get in Denis Suarez. And look, you know, injuries happen. You can't legislate for injuries. But ultimately, we spent a month trying to bring in a player who hadn't played really all season for Barcelona, so was never going to be match fit. And we needed him kind of at the time we signed him because Mkhitaryan was out injured and Ozil was, you know, on the outskirts of the team because of whatever was going on with him and Emery and whatever else. So, you know, to sign a player who wasn't ready to come into the team.
Yep.
Just, you know, it's, you know, the previous manager would have got pelters for that. You know, no question about it.
No doubt.
It's not, I don't think it was a smart move. I don't really think he was the right player anyway. You know, he was very lightweight. He's cost us a lot of money that we couldn't, you know, we don't have a huge budget and that's cost us £3 or 4 million.
Mm.
You know, in a loan fee and paying his wages for what? About 90 minutes of football is about all he played. That's it, you know, across a number of substitute appearances. So, if you know, that's a bad deal. And if that's a precursor of what Emery and Sanyehi are cooking up, then I'm really worried.
Okay, so that's interesting. So we've had another question from at Neil Gargis, AFC Neil. He said, how did FFP rules affect our Jan transfer business? How does that change this summer with Champions League and without?
I'm not 100% sure on that. There were some stories going around that we couldn't afford to add anything to the wage bill, which doesn't make sense because we added Denis Suarez to the wage bill. You know, there is a rule that you can't increase your wage bill by a certain amount in a season. I think that's gone now. That rule is gone. I suspect that there is an edict from on high to reduce the wage bill by a considerable amount this summer. And when you think Ramsey's going, Welbeck's going, Cech is going, that's a big chunk off it already. And I have a feeling there might be one or two high earners who could well be on the way out this summer, not necessarily because of their perceived quality as players, but because of how much money they earn. I think it's difficult for the club, you know, to maybe to move them on. But if there's a, way of doing it, I think that they will, because it's bloated. The wage bill is really, really bloated.
Yeah.
And that's a consequence of the way things were run under Arsene Wenger and Ivan Gazidis. And they have to take their share of the blame for that. So I do wonder if that will inform the business that we do in the summer. You know, I mean, I don't know what Lucas Torreira is earning. He's earning maybe £60,000-£70,000 a week, maybe, you know, when you think about what Mesut Ozil and Mkhitaryan are earning between them, that's £550,000 a week between them. That's a lot, isn't it? You know, that's,
Mkhitaryan for me has been one of the worst signings in the history of Arsenal Football Club. He is the shadow of a player that he was at Dortmund. He was not good at United, £180,000 a week. And, but for a really good February this year, boy, has he been, in your words, Andrew, shite.
Okay. So we've got one more question I'd like to ask from Bartholomew at Barthol and about 400 numbers that I'm not going to read. Why are we not addressing our defensive coaching staff? This has gone on for far too long and it is boring, isn't it, Andrew? How many times we all sit here and go, what is Steve Bold actually doing?
You know, great question.
What is, I mean, we do need to address that. Do you think that could be addressed this summer?
Maybe, but I mean, is that not ultimately the job of Unai Emery? You know, I think we can all sit here and go, what does Steve Bold do? But maybe another question is, what is Steve Bold allowed to do? What was he allowed to do under Arsene Wenger? What is he allowed to do under Unai Emery in terms of specific defensive training? I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I genuinely don't know. What I do know is that Arsenal can't defend properly. We're not a good defensive team, and it's not just about the defenders, it's about the team. We weren't a good defensive team under Wenger for a good few years. But I don't know if you can just go out and say, let's bring in a defensive coach and he can fix all the problems. I don't think that's how it works. You know, I think the book stops with the man who is the head coach, because he's got his own staff.
Dumb.
He's got, they're his staff. All the coaches are his. He made the decisions on who to bring in, you know, his right-hand man. He's got his goalkeeping coach. He's got, you know, he kept Steve Bold. I'm not sure whether that was because he really wanted or respected or understood or knew Steve Bold's work as a coach, or whether it was to have somebody on the coaching staff who really understood the club. And whatever else you might say, Steve Bold knows Arsenal and knows what it's about and knows, you know, the success that we've had and how we've had that success down the years. You know, he does know all that, but so I don't know what his role is. I don't know how much of the defensive blame we can apportion to Steve Bold, because I really don't know what he's doing or what he's being allowed to do or how much responsibility he has. I mean, if you tell me right now, Steve Bold is the defensive coach and it's his job to make the team defensively secure, I'd say he is not doing a very good job. But my suspicion is that's not the case. Well, I don't think it's the case.
I think it was the case with Wenger. I don't think he was given that, but I'm not sure now. And my one question, sorry, because I want to interrupt you with that, was when you went, it's the head coach's responsibility. Is he actually in charge? We'll never know, will we? And that's the thing. Until we knew Wenger was in charge. He was in charge of everything. Emery may not be in charge of any of that. He may not be in charge of transfers. And this is where I feel it's a little bit unfair on him. We just don't know, Andrew, do we? We just don't know.
He's a head coach, and I think the responsibility in that sense means that he is responsible for everything that goes on the pitch.
Yes, training.
But,
right?
But was he
everything.
Employed by Gazidis? He was not there anymore.
Gazidis and the board made the decision to appoint him. And you know, that's where I think we can judge the man. We have worries about who's going to do the transfers. That should never have been Emery's job. The idea was that we would have a chief executive who was Ivan Gazidis.
Mm.
We'd have a head of football relations or director of football who was Raul Sanyehi. And we were going to have Sven Mislintat, who would identify the talent. Sanyehi does the deals to bring them in. He was the closer. He was the, you know, that guy, the businessman. And then you have a CEO who has responsibility for all of that. Now we have a job share CEO. We don't know who's going to make the transfer decisions this summer and who's going to do the deals. We don't know who's scouting the players. But what we do know is that what happens on the football pitch is entirely down to Unai Emery, because he picks the team. He does the training. He selects the formations and he selects everything else. And leaving aside the issues that we have with the squad, what happens on the pitch is his responsibility and ultimately his responsibility, you know, he's got to translate the work from the training ground to the pitch.
100%. He's the one that chose to go 4-4-2 against Leicester. He's the one that chose to play Elneny and Guendouzi against Everton. He's the one that chose the team against Crystal Palace. 100% correct, Andrew. He is responsible for those decisions, and he has made some very bad decisions over the last three or four games. We had it in the palm of our hands we actually had the ability to not only finish in the top four, finish above Spurs, a team which arguably we should have beaten, as you guys said, twice this season. And he kind of failed. And I think it's okay for Arsenal fans to ask questions based on these last few games. But let's get you out on this. You've been very, very generous with your time. Here we go. The big, okay. The big predictions. Mr. Mangan, here we go. Europa okay. League against Valencia. Do we make the final? Do we win it? And then how do you see top four finishing? Include that race between some team called City and Liverpool. I mean, you know, I don't know what's going on over there, but what are your thoughts?
My gut feeling tells me that we can beat Valencia because I think Emery is a specialist in the Europa League. I think maybe now that there's almost total focus on that. I mean, we did so well against Napoli. If that's what we're looking at as the guide to how we can play against Valencia, you know, I think we can beat Valencia. I think we can get to the final. I don't know who we're going to face. I hate the idea of facing Chelsea in a European final. I just feel maybe we don't quite have it in us to go the distance, in the Europa League. Top four. I think we fucked it, to be honest. You know, the last week, you know, it's not impossible, but we've got to beat Brighton and then we've got to go to Burnley the day or the week after the away game in Valencia. And we saw how difficult it was for Man City at Burnley. And we've had a really, really tough time in Burnley the last few seasons, haven't we? You know, there was a really difficult few games there. I'm not sure this team away from home has the fortitude to get the result that we need if we need a result. So I think we won't finish in the top four. And then what was the last bit? It was about who's winning the title.
That's right. Who do you fancy? Or who do you fancy? And obviously, I don't think anyone wants Liverpool to win, but hey, I'm kind of over it now. I really care less who wins,
to be honest. I do want Liverpool to win. I'm the only Arsenal fan that does, I think.
I also would prefer Liverpool to win than Manchester City. I realize it would make everybody's life a little more annoying because they all know Liverpool fans and, you know, there aren't that many Manchester City fans around because, you know, their success is such a recent phenomenon that their fan base hasn't really spread the way that, you know, other clubs have.
Yeah.
You know, so I get it. But I just find, you know, if we're sitting here as Arsenal fans looking to the future and hoping that one day we can be the Premier League champions again, we kind of have to look to Liverpool as the way to do it, right? That Liverpool is more in line with us than Manchester City will ever be now. You know, I find there's something really unpleasant and sinister about Manchester City and the whole City Group thing and the way they own football clubs around the world. And it's all this, you know, slick marketing and everything else to make us forget what it's actually all about and what a cynical exercise it is for a country or for basically a nation state to own a football club and just pump billions of pounds into it illegally in some cases because of, you know, they breached FFP rules and all that kind of stuff. You know, I think when we talk about football losing its soul or what we all treasure from the game, Manchester City is antithetical to that for me anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's horrible. I can appreciate what a fantastic team they are and what a great coach they have and what a fantastic season they've had. But if you're asking me from a purely football point of view, what I would like to see, I would like to see a football club that has more or less generated its own money through player sales and built a team with a really good, really smart, really passionate coach and gone from where they were maybe 3 or 4 years ago to now having a season where they're on 91 points and still not sure of winning the league, which is ludicrous in itself. But that's maybe something we can aspire to do what Liverpool did. We cannot aspire to be what Manchester City are because we don't have an owner who is like that. So
God, we've talked about this all season. And if we were ever in two minds, Amanda, Andrew's totally convinced me. And in fact, he should be our director of football. Period.
Good luck directing you, my love.
Oh my goodness. I don't know about that. I don't think I could take all the abuse on Twitter.
No, but, you couldn't. You know,
that's why I think I would prefer Liverpool to win it if they could. I don't think they will.
No.
That's the thing. I think Manchester City will win it, but I would prefer Liverpool out of the two.
I think Liverpool will win it. I've said it since last October. I just think they will. I think something's going to twist in a game where we don't expect it. I've got very, very good Scouse mates, and I've got very, very good City friends that when I go up north with Arsenal treat me amazing. And I love them both, you know, and I just think there's something about Liverpool, and there always has been. Obviously, I haven't mentioned this for a while, but I was there at Anfield in 89, and it's very special to me.
Thank God.
I know, it's been a while. It's been at least a month I've not mentioned it. My Liverpool mates are exactly how you just, you know, everyone knows. They don't care about anyone else. They're not interested. And I love that, actually. Their attitude is so funny. It's so different. I'll go to a match and think we're going to lose. They go to a match and think they're going to win. That's it. End of it. They never think the way I do. You know, and to be fair, my City mates are a bit like that. But I think
two players, Amanda, change their trajectory. VVD and Alisson.
Yeah,
made them.
But hold on. They had Salah last year and Firmino, and they've got the base. Yeah.
The final piece of the jigsaw puzzle, yeah, year on year.
Yeah.
Evolved. Okay. We got to go. We've got to get your prediction. Valencia versus Arsenal. What do you fancy? Do you think we get to the Europa League final? PG, real quick.
I'm going on Thursday night, and unfortunately, I think it'll be 1-0, which is not brilliant for us. I think we could, and I think the irony would be that we get stuffed against Brighton and Burnley and win the Europa Cup and end up in the Champions League. I think that would just be so Arsenal to do that. And I do think that we will draw on Sunday as well. I just think our confidence is shot. But Thursday night will be different, and we need to raise the roof when we get there, that's for sure.
I think we win 3-1 on Thursday. Ooh. We'll get Casey's predictions on the Twitter feed. 3 is my favorite number this year. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, Andrew, you've been an amazing guest, and I'm going to let you out on this one. Here is the toughest question you're going to be asked all season. You ready? Okay. If you could be married to Pires and eat jamon, however you pronounce it, Ruffles, for the rest of your life, or see Arsenal win the Premier League one more time, what are you choosing?
Oh, I think as somebody who cares very deeply for Arsenal and Arsenal fans, I've got to go with the Premier League. I'll sacrifice the life of Bobby and Hamon Ruffles for all of you guys. I'd love to see us win the league again.
Well, wouldn't it be wonderful even if we can compete again? You've been a wonderful guest. Thank you so much for your wisdom, your insights, just beautiful dialogue. And listen, there's still something to play for. It's not over yet.
Oh, yeah.
Sure is. Oh. You know, it's been difficult, but there's still, you know, a European trophy at the end of this season would be an amazing thing. And it would melt away a lot of the frustration. It wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't necessarily mean that the concerns that we had or have or would still have aren't valid, but goddamn, we'd have a hell of a party. So let's keep fingers crossed.
Oh, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. It's just been fantastic. It's always brilliant to talk to you, and I love all your tweets and stuff. And if anyone is so Arsenal, it's you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me, and keep up the good work on the podcast.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. Bye.
Bye.
So we're coming to the end of the podcast, and he was just amazing. I just love him anyway. I'd like to thank everyone for sending in questions tonight, tweeting us, everything. And, you know, we're nothing without anyone that listens to us go on and on every week. We just want Arsenal to succeed, and we need our fans on Thursday night to absolutely lift the Emirates.
We do. There's got to be a rallying cry. You're going to be there.
Yeah.
And I tweeted you during the Crystal Palace game where it got really quiet. And I said, come on, everyone get stuck in. And I'm hoping on a European night, the Valencia fans are going to be up for it. I'm hoping our fans will be up for it. This is our shot, Amanda. And if there's one competition that Unai has proved that he can win, this is it. This is where we're going to put all of our eggs in the basket. We've got to go for it. So, yes.
Okay. Thanks, Soph. Brilliant, brilliant podcast. Let's hope that your prediction's correct for Thursday. We will get Kev's prediction as well. And
only one thing remains, babe. Only one thing remains.
I think
just remind everyone, okay?
Always Arsenal.